This is Radioactive Magazine, a KKFI public affairs program of progressive activism, opinion, and commentary. Opinions expressed on this program are those of the speakers alone and are not necessarily the views of KKFI, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, show hosts, or other guests on the program.
Tonight on Radioactive Magazine, we're going to have a discussion with three members of the National Organization for Women, and that is for women, not of women. And the members are Amy Bell, co-host of Every Woman on KKFI and Kansas State National Organization for Women Coordinator, and Mary Mosley, long time NOW member from at least two states that I'm aware of, and one of the, not founding members, but she was an early member, and she can tell you more about that. She now is the Missouri lobbyist for the Missouri National Organization for Women and belongs to the Columbia chapter of NOW. Amy and I presume we both belong to Johnson Wyandotte County's NOW chapter.
Correct.
That's correct. Good. So, Amy, how shall we start this talk?
Well, you know, one of my observations in working with the National Organization for Women is that I have a lot of conversations with people who don't believe that there is still a necessity for women's equality activism. And it can be one of the biggest struggles facing women's equality organizations. And also, it's just very perplexing because when you are active and in this struggle for equality, you see all kinds of things that we need improvement on, and things that a lot of people maybe wouldn't think, like our judicial system being unnecessarily biased towards men over women in child custody cases, which before I went to the courthouse and saw this for myself, I thought that there was a natural bias towards women over men in child custody cases, that there was this idea that children needed their mothers, and I believed that mothers were getting custody over fathers with more frequency than the pages being turned, but we are not necessarily seeing that. We're seeing a lot of women being severely mistreated in our judicial system.
And while probably largely women do retain custody most often, if a man contests it, he is likely to get custody of the children. And also, I would like to point out that it's largely about the money. The money is the big driver. Men who don't want to pay their wives spousal maintenance or child support will often go after custody because they have a mother at home, or they can leave the children with their mother, or a new girlfriend, a replacement mom, so that they don't have to pay for child care. So it's about the money, as largely much in this society is about the money.
Well, there are lots of issues that still need to be worked on, but to talk for just a minute more about this particular issue, I think that what we need to do is go to a guaranteed income for each child so that they'll have enough to live on and enough food to put in their mouths and enough clothes to put on their backs, and that would take away the enmity between women and men who have children in common, because this is very, very common that this happens. They go to court and they fight over the children, and the man gets custody if he wants it, and if the woman does get custody, then she can't get the man to pay child support, and it just creates a tremendous amount of enmity between women and men. And so I think that the only way to stop that is to have a guaranteed income for children.
Well, and you know, this type of thing, just the actual custody battle itself, I mean, I think that sounds a little mundane, and that it's something that just happens all the time, and we're maybe nitpicking about men getting custody of their children. But we're witnessing things like when there is joint custody and the ex-husband essentially kidnaps the child and refuses to let the mother see it, the courts just refuse to enforce a custody order. I've seen women get yelled at for desperately pleading with a judge that they just want to see their child that they haven't seen in 3 months' time. It was incredible stuff. It's not this just mundane divvying up of the time in a divorce settlement. It's just appalling. It's shocking when you actually go and see what some women are facing up in front of a judge when it comes to their own children.
Well, it's interesting to know how some of the legislation's passed, too. There was a legislative aide who was in a messy divorce, and so he crafted some legislation, which actually got passed in Missouri, because he didn't want to pay child support for his child. So you can't move more than 30 miles away from your ex-spouse if you have child custody of the children. Not a good way to make legislation. They say you should not watch sausages or legislation being made, and unfortunately I've done both. But I'd like to talk about some of the other issues that I think are equally as pressing, such as, for example, sexual assault. Anybody who thinks that that the sexual revolution is over and we have won should look at the statistics on sex assaults and rape. And we're seeing right now a period where colleges and universities are being called to account over this, and they're being asked to explain why they're doing the things that they're doing, and they're being asked to put the onus on the perpetrators rather than on the victims. And I think that that's where that has to go. And the other thing is domestic violence. You know, to people who say to me, well, I have all the rights I want, I'd say, well, you know, thank you. We must have done a wonderful job, you know, if you're not feeling any discrimination. But think about those women who are, because there are still way too many women who are being assaulted, attacked, both physically and mentally in their own homes by their partners, their intimate partners, and who are seeking shelter outside their homes in domestic violence shelters. And I think that we've got that one wrong, too. As long as I'm being radical here, I think that instead of taking the victim out of the home, we should take the perpetrator out of the home.
Well, and one thing, too, is that if you look at the laws, we do have some laws that do appear to be taking on domestic violence rather successfully. They say the right things. But once again, I'll go back to what I'm seeing play out in the courts themselves. You know, maybe they'll decide that, oh, well, in this case, we don't necessarily need to enforce the idea that this man shouldn't be around guns and ammunition.
Yeah, we have a strong gun culture, and that would be a macho thing in this country. That, you know, we really, really love our guns, and we just hesitate to take them away from any man.
Well, a woman who has been a victim of domestic violence has a much higher chance of being involved in gun violence later, and oftentimes by the same person who perpetrated the domestic violence against them.
Yes.
After they've gotten out of the situation, that is indeed correct. And we just recently were in the courtroom, and the perpetrator works in a munitions factory, and that's, according to the judge, that probably is problematic, and perhaps he needs to seek legal help because his employer has advised him that they wanted him to seek modification of this protection order. But the judge went on to say that it was okay for police officers and military people who had been charged with domestic violence to continue going to work and doing their job. And Amy and I had a wee bit of a disagreement, but she swayed me to her side. It is a well-known fact, statistically, that police officers are the largest perpetrators of domestic violence in their homes.
Well, and not to say that all police officers are violent towards women, but when you have a police officer who has a record of domestic violence, who is actually been accused, been found guilty, and has a protective order against him, and that protective order says he shouldn't carry guns, outside of his job as a police officer, it's appalling to me that he's allowed to carry a gun within his job as a police officer, because how do you feel as a woman to get pulled over by a known violent man with a deadly weapon and call that being protected?
It does seem a bit of a contrast, a conflict, that a police officer should be allowed to keep their job after they've been charged with violence.
Yeah, it's pretty upsetting. When I was the state president of the National Organization for Women in Missouri, I would get calls from women who said that they had called the police repeatedly trying to get relief from their domestic violence situation, and the police would just laugh at them. Or the police would threaten them with domestic violence. Or the police in small towns would be friends with their husband, so they wouldn't do anything to him, you know.
Yeah, we've still see stuff like that, too, where maybe the county sheriff is a buddy, and they're not going to really pursue the allegations any further because they certainly don't want to get their buddy in trouble, and obviously he's a good old boy.
So we have child custody, divorce, domestic violence, assault, and another issue, I guess, could be equal pay.
Ah, yes. An issue dear to my heart.
Yes. You know, what comes to my mind right now that I think maybe a lot of people may understand is look at what NFL cheerleaders are. I was going to say paid, but not paid would be a better description.
And that would be interesting, wouldn't it?
What? They don't get paid?
No.
They're risking the violence. I mean, just as much harm to their bodies and do they have help? Do they have insurance coverage?
You know, I think they get a small amount of compensation, but barely anything. And what the NFL says is that the cheerleaders should just be honored to be there. That it's such an honor to be an NFL cheerleader that they don't really need to pay them. But I would say that I know an awful lot of men who would be tickled to death to play football on television for no pay as well.
We were having lunch today with a group of, five or six men that all they were talking about were their football plays. And I bet that they would be among those people that would have loved to be televised.
You're right.
Absolutely. And you look at what they get paid, and I guarantee you, you could find enough men willing to play football just for the love of the game on television every Sunday afternoon to fill every NFL stadium in the country. But that idea just seems silly to people. But it's just, well, of course the cheerleaders shouldn't get paid. What do they really do? Well, they work for one of the richest organizations
in
America.
Which is tax-exempt, by the way, just in case you didn't know that.
Yeah, they're not-for-profit. The NFL.
Right, not-for-profit. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Well, let's go back to equal pay for just a minute or two, because we have some more things to say about it. You know, on average, women earn 77 cents to every dollar a man earns, or you could put it another way. Men work a year for their dollar, and women work a year and 3.5 months, approximately, to make the same amount as a man earns. But there are right-wing groups that would like to debunk these statistics, and so they point out that there's a certain group of women from ages 22 to 26 or something like that that actually makes more than men. But, you know, they don't tell you that it's only this rarefied group of women.
And that has to do with what?
Yeah. They're trying to prove that there are women that actually make more than men, or that there is no pay gap between women and men, or that the pay gap between women and men has been exaggerated. And, you know, the thing is that this is the issue that gets most women, that makes most women into feminists. And certainly that's true in my case, because I was teaching at an all-male school. I was an adjunct professor. And one day I got to talking to one of the men adjuncts, And he told me how much, he said, I'll tell you how much I'm making if you'll tell me how much you're making. And he was making twice as much as I was. And we had, you know, we were the same level of education and everything, but he had, I had female genitals and he had male ones, so he was worth twice as much as I was.
I had a similar experience. I was working at a drugstore right out of high school. I was in college and had a part-time job doing pharmacy tech work. And I was talking to a male coworker of mine who was a sophomore in high school. I was a sophomore in college and a pharmacy technician at the drugstore. He was a sophomore in high school and a clerk. And he was making a dollar an hour more than I was.
Yeah.
And the conversation started because he was complaining about how little he was getting paid.
Yeah.
And I just, my jaw dropped and I quit.
Amy, what year was that?
That would have been in 2004.
What year was your experience?
2002?
1967, I believe.
1967. I have traditionally been self-employed and worked in an industry where I'm on commission only. So I can't point to discrimination in pay, except for the fact that I know as a woman I've had to work twice as hard to prove my worth, to prove myself. And there's an old saying out there about a woman has to work twice as hard as a man to make as much money, but fortunately this isn't a problem.
Well, that is one thing that is often said, is that women don't want the high-paying jobs. Well, they could have them naturally, but, you know, there just aren't too many women who want to be CEOs. Well, when you go through a company that systematically tells you you're out of line every time you have an ounce of ambition, a lot of women get frustrated, and yeah, by the time they reach the upper echelons, they're tired of it all.
It's funny that Time magazine was putting out a list of words to be banned, and feminist was on that list. And I say that because the feminist word, F word we call it, is such a scary word. It kind of goes along, and Mary says they've backed down on that now. I have a friend, we have a now member friend that's now in Florida, who used to say that she tells women who say to her, I'm not a feminist, but, she calls them femibuts. They would say, I'm not a feminist, but I believe in equal pay for equal work. And I loved her femibut description. That's great. But back to the, I lost my point. Go ahead.
That feminism is a bad word. That's absolutely. And that goes along with this idea that women already have equal rights. So at this point, since we already have equal rights, I mean, except for equal respect in the courtroom when dealing with our own children, except for domestic violence, except for sexual assault, except for equal pay, except for respect when trying to move forward with ambition, except for all of that, we are equal, and therefore, if you're a feminist, you're just complaining and starting trouble. And they've convinced an entire generation of people that if you speak up and say that you want equality, that you are just causing trouble, and that feminist is trouble.
And I recall what it was I wanted to say. Years ago in the financial securities industry, one of my peers that started training behind me came up to me and said, you are one of the most aggressive women I have ever met. And I looked up at him because I was busy, and he always liked for me to look at him when I talked. But when he was talking to me, I usually was trying to do something else. That's another funny story. And I looked up to thank him and realized he did not mean it as a compliment. There you go. An aggressive man is a compliment, but an aggressive woman is a what? Travesty?
B-I-T-C-H.
There you go. That's a good one.
Being in total charge of herself.
Yeah,
well, the media has taken the word feminism and they have they have declawed it. You know, they have made it into a dirty word so that they can disempower the feminist movement. That's what that's all about.
Well, it also helps that when you have all of these young women that say, yes, of course we should get an equal pay. Yes, of course we should stand up against sexual assault and domestic violence. And then say, okay, well, you can do all of that, but that doesn't mean you're a feminist. So that kind of prevents them from having this unified theory amongst each other that they can absolutely feel solidarity in. It's just this random thing over here and that random thing over there that a few people over here and over there are going to work on, but it doesn't mean that they're feminists that are part of the overall national movement of feminists.
Right, and that's why the media has turned the term into a dirty word. I think that they have portrayed us as bra burners and man haters. And, no bras were ever burned.
Yeah, I don't leave home without one.
Well, I've been known to, but...
You didn't burn it.
But nobody burned their bras. They threw things into a garbage can. There was a wonderful demonstration against the Miss America pageant in the early days of the feminist movement. And they threw into garbage cans things that they thought were oppressive to women. And one of the things that they threw into the garbage can was a bra and a girdle. In those days, we had to wear these horrible girdles. And before them came corsets, which were whale bones in them, and you laced them up so tight that you couldn't breathe. And so, you know, that's another issue. Dress is another issue. But anyway, they were protesting all these restrictions that were placed on women, and so they threw these things into a garbage can, and then bra burner, because of the alliteration, became a term that they called us by, and castrating bitches, you know, as another one. And then man-haters, and that's the one that gets me the most, because I think, you know, it can't be about women. It always has to be about
the man. Yeah.
Always has to be about men.
Well, you know, in the early ages, they burned women at the stake and called them witches who dared to speak out and exhibit any kind of aggressive behavior.
Or not necessarily, maybe even being part of a traditional women's occupation, a natural healer, a midwife, something that was in the community traditionally something held by women. They in the Middle Ages decided that was too much power.
Barbara Ehrenreich years and years ago wrote a little book called Witches, Midwives, and Nurses. And I remember reading that back in, what, the 70s, I suppose, and it really made me mad.
You know, and I have to say that one of the things that I am very proud about being an out feminist and a member of NOW is the very concept that if I had been alive 500 years ago, I would have been burned at the stake, and that's kind of cool.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the man-hating part, because, you know, the National Organization for Women is the National Organization for Women, not of women, and there have always been men among our ranks. We were started in 1966 because, although we had the Civil Rights Act of 1964 passed, and it included women as a protected category, but they thought, the men who passed this, thought it was just a big joke, and so they weren't going to enforce that provision of the Civil Rights Act. And so the women, they filed tons of complaints. I mean, the men were astounded at how many complaints were filed, but they wouldn't do anything about it. And so Betty Friedan and some women gathered in a hotel room, and there were about a dozen women, I guess, gathered, and they were both, of European descent, African Americans. It was a very, fairly diverse group, and they decided that they would start an organization for women like the NAACP, for African Americans to get the Civil Rights Act enforced for women. And so that's how NOW started.
Yeah, it's always been about equality. It's not about women having dominance over men. That is a myth. It's the myth of misandry, and it is not a real thing. We are not plotting the overthrow of men.
We speak for yourself.
Well, Mary no. is plotting the overthrow of men.
No.
But only a few targeted men, not all of them as a whole, I suppose.
I would like to say that our speakers today are Amy Bell. You're listening to Radioactive Magazine. Amy Bell, Mary Mosley from Missouri, and Sharon Lockhart. And both Amy and I produce Every Woman on KKFI, as well as Belong to NOW.
And I'm just a troublemaker all around.
And that is all the time we have for Radioactive Magazine.
Many nights we prayed with no proof anyone could hear. In our hearts a home for song we barely understood. Now we are not afraid, although we know there's much to fear. We were moving mountains long before we knew we could. Oh, yes. There can be miracles when you believe. Though hope is frail, it's hard to kill.
Houston. You are listening to Radioactive Magazine, a presentation of KKFI 90.1 FM in Kansas City. Radioactive Magazine is to provide a forum for Kansas City local activist groups. If your activist group would like to be a part of Radioactive Magazine to contribute commentaries, be guests, or be interviewed, please contact Dan Connolly at area code 816-217-5800. 7-5. Coming up after the following messages will be Counterspin. And on Counterspin this evening, we have Marion Caba on Ferguson and Daphne Wysham on the U.S.-China recent climate deal. Don't forget to stay tuned at 7 o'clock tonight is Taste of Tejano with Viviana and Manny, followed at 9:30 with Lily and Breaking Through Darkness. Again, you are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.